Go ahead.
I made a major part of it. So there were a few questions, you know, it's different. But I made a major part of it. So I finished 6 areas right now out of 8, and I have 2 more to go. So
I just didn't know if it was a part of the final or if it was your final.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Yes. You're going to get a cheat sheet, and on one side, anything you want to write. And I made a cheat sheet last semester, you know, when I sit on the test. So I'd be glad to scan my cheat sheet, let you see what I did. But I didn't see, you know, how much that helps. So it does not help that much unless you understand what you're looking for. Okay. So again, you know, put your emphasis on understand the basic concepts. Okay, and if you do not have time, you know, you want to omit something, omit the complicated ones, you know, so go over the basic concepts. It's very important. Go ahead.
When we did test 2, we got that sheet of the formulas for, I believe it was the queuing. Are we going to have that sheet again? No.
I'm not going to give you anything. So anything you want, and you may kind of try to put that part of your, you know, yeah.
Can we possibly use that fact sheet as like?
It's up to you.
Okay.
So it's, you know, your choice. Okay. Again, you know, Thursday we're gonna go over simulation and forecasting, regression, decision analysis. That's our test 1, part of test 2, and then next Monday we're gonna have one more study session before the test on Tuesday. So that will be 5 to 7. So any of you have a question by then, you can drop by. And you know, there are a couple of people from the classes. They regularly participate in the study session. And from this test, I can see, you know, as a group, they actually doing better. So I encourage you to study together. And especially for any difficult courses like this, you're going to benefit from it. Okay, now let's go over the test first. Okay, you look at your grades, and anywhere you know you have questions, and you can let me know. And okay, now the first question, define decision variable clearly. So there are people didn't specify what kind of aspects of the robot, for example, we're looking for. We're looking for the number of them, you know, the quantity of them, whatever you say, you know. If anybody didn't specify that, you may get 5 points deducted. So, and then the objective function, you have to specify it is a maximization problem, maximize the profit. If you do not have those, you're going to get 5 points deducted. So, that's the decision variable and the objective function. Question. Most of you did this correctly. Few get a few points deducted because your decision variable is not that specific, and also one or two, you know, put some of the define a lot of decision variables virtually part of the constraint, so that's wrong. Okay. And then the you need to know each constraint what we're looking for. Okay, we're looking for, in this case, fabrication and packaging time. We spend whatever the time we spend for those products based on the information provided, less than equals available fabrication packaging times. Okay, so that's, you need to be specific. And then the required production amount of plastics used, less than equals total available plastics over here. So you need to kind of provide those details. And this part, there are people indicated are integers, that's okay. And there are people didn't specify greater than equal 0, that's also okay, because this constraint greater than 10, each piece, going to kind of override, you know, this this greater than zero. So, okay. Question. Okay, you know, if you have any question, and you can let me know. So there are cases when I grade, you know, I couldn't see the logic of your solution. You got points deducted, and you can let me know. You know, I can see if that's reasonable, and you're gonna get the points back. I graded the paper, you know, two or three times. So it's my first time. So grade that many times, try to get some points for you. So okay, let's look at this one. It's a very simple question. There are people cannot work through this. Okay, if you make any mistake, get any points deducted, you need to know exactly where, how can you avoid this? Because it's a very simple question, you know. So anybody miss points over here, it's sad, you know. You can see there are two ways to work through this algebraically, you know, identify the joins. One is like what I did, you know, you multiply one of the equation to be sure, you know, the coefficient of one of the variable going to match up so you can get rid of them, you know, so that's what I did. But you can use back substitution for it as well. If you do back substitution, I strongly recommend you to look at the problem. In this case, you can see, use back substitution for x or y from constraint number 3, start with this. It's much easier, okay? Because that already give you, you know, x equals 2 plus y, you know, right away. You can put them back over here. You can get the answer for 1, and then go back, bring them back to this equation 3 to get the answer for x. So, but anyway, you have to learn carry this out correctly, okay? And how people lose points? There are a few I actually marked the regions, you know, you made a mistake, you know, a couple of things. Feasible region. This line is this way. And there are people ask me, you know, this one is negative points over here. Is what are we gonna do? We don't care. Why? Think about we draw this line and this line. If you draw these two lines, the line can be extended over to the negative as well. If you chose a point over here, it's negative. But you do not care, because you only care the portion in the first coordinate. Yes, there is a point over here, it's negative. Who cares? Because we only consider the portion of the line from this point and up. So that's just a way for you to quickly draw the line, because you identify two points, that's just happened to be one of the points. If you do not want the negative, you're going to select the point over here. You know, it's equally fine, because once you identify two points, you get the line. So it won't make any difference. Direction of the line. Identify the direction of the line is also important, because there are people, you know, mark this area as a feasible region. That's wrong. It's not a feasible region. It's up, you know, in this case. So be sure you understand, you know, the direction of it and how to determine the direction of it. Okay. So the way I normally do for identify the direction of it, if I look at x, for example. Forget this y in the second equation. I found it is effective for me. So you have to figure out your logic, okay? Equation number 1, number 2, no problem. You know, nobody has any problem to see the direction of it. Equation number 3. What I normally do, I normally hide, you know, one of the variable. In this case, y, for example. I only look at x less than equals 2, okay? So x less than equals 2, what does that mean on this graph? X less than equals 2, for me, it's going to be a straight line at this point, to the left. Am I right? To the left. Okay? Now, what that minus y does? that minus y does is to turn the line. But the direction is not changed. Make sense? You know, the minus y turn the line in a, you know, like this. Okay? So that's why, you know, it's going to be this way. Okay? Question, anybody? And there are people who couldn't find a way to mark objective function. You got the points deducted. And the way you draw the objective function is to assume an arbitrary value of this. Give an arbitrary value, and then you get 2 points. Okay, just arbitrary sign the value, and then you can draw that line. Okay? Question. Okay, with that, and then you look at the next one. The slacks. In this case, you know, equation number 2. When we look at slack, by definition, that's the difference between the resource we consumed actually at the point of the solution versus available on the right hand side of the constraint. So we look at constraint number 2. So number 2, right hand side is 16 units. Okay? And how much we actually used at the optimal solution at this point? The optimal solution is going to be, you know, 3.2 for x and 1.2 for y, and give you 8.8. So the difference is going to be 7.2 at the slack. What does that mean? That means we have additional resource available for second constraint. It's not a binding. But if we consume 7.2 more, it's going to be binding. And how do we see those? If you look at this graph, this line is the constraint number 2. Okay? If this line moving inward, that means the resource, the right hand side, reducing. When you reduce to 7.2, that will be 8.8. That's exactly going to be this 2 prime, this line, okay? This dotted line over here. Now you can move further. If you move any further than that, you know, the amount of slack, the solution is going to change because that's going to bring down the feature region. So the optimal solution is going to change. You know, this objective line is going to move over here. So you can see any change in the right hand side, once it's bounded, going to change the feasible region and going to cause the change in the optimal solution. Okay. So that's what we're looking for. And then that's the region we specify over here. So you can see, you know, when you have a slack, it's not bounded. You know, it does not have any effect on the solution. But you know, when the slack is removed, it's going to be bounded. So that's what we're looking for. Okay. Now look at the next question. The next question is pretty much like one of the assignments we had. So anybody independently did your assignment, you should get this correct. So at least to get a major part of it correct. Okay. To answer this question, you know, it is important to develop a timeline like this. So you can see 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and so on. You define the corresponding variables associated with each of them. We, up to the end of hour 6 p.m., end of hour 6 p.m. So 7 p.m. is not necessary. It's not necessary. So when I look at the problems, they adopted one of the problems from one of the textbook problems, and I made some modification. For example, the lunchtime hour, they actually removed the lunchtime hour, so they do not pay lunchtime for employee. So in that sense, you know, each of these 4 times, actually, if they go over lunchtime period, they're going to have 1 hour deducted. But I simplified the case. I didn't specify that. And that's the reason, you know, this guy actually work 8 hours, and then you actually get into 7. But it's essentially That's what happened. So it's not necessary for F12 and P4 in this situation because P3 and F11 already covered last hour. Okay, but anyway, let's look at the objective function. Not a lot of people has any problem with this, so a lot of people, most of them get this correct. And then for each constraint, we look at the number of tellers working should be greater than equals number of tellers required. And how do we know it? Again, this timeline is a map, so you look at each of them and then moving forward piece by piece and be sure understand just one column there, you understand the logic, the rest should be easy, you know. So it happened to be, you know, if somebody got it, you got the whole thing. Somebody miss it, you miss the whole thing, you know. So that's the nature of this portion. And then you can see all those time at the beginning of the hour. So 9 o'clock full time plus 9 o'clock part time greater than equal 6. And so on. The last one, you can see the last one, 11, 12 plus 3 and 4 part time greater than equal 6. And you can see that's why I said, you know, if you look at this carefully, and you can see this one is not necessary because that's outside of what we need. You know, it's bank already closed. So some people assume F12 works 7 hours and FP4 works 3 hours. You know, that's okay. So integer and so on. So question. Anybody, any question? You okay with it? You can see the logic of it. And then looking at the last, you know, question C, 50% of full-time people, at least 50% should be full-time people when the bank starts. So you look at the total number of people during that time segment, 9-hour segment, and 50% of them or more should be full-time. So. And look at this question. Again, you know, it's a abbreviated version of one of the homework problem, and it's critical to develop a timeline like this. You can see each year and define your variables accordingly. Okay, and the payout for the tuition and fees, you know, expenses during the years in school. You know, there are people assume they happen at the beginning of the year and others happen at the end of the year. And the only thing I require you to do is be consistent. So if you be consistent, fine for me, you know. So I didn't make much argument over there. Let's look at the very basic logic here. The logic here is the amount get in, the cash inflow or money inflow equals money outflow. So that's the basic logic over here, okay? So just be sure, stay with the logic, you'll be okay. Now, the definition for the decision variables, we specify the quantity of each of them as a decision variable over here at the beginning of the year. you cannot just use AI, BI, CI, I equals 1 to 6 because that does not happen to some of the others. So to be sure, you know, what you said, you know exactly what you're doing. Okay. And then the objective function over here, we minimize initial investment. So that's the way we do it. If anybody did not give me specifically what we're looking for over here, you may get 5 points deducted. And for the objective function, somebody did not specify minimization problem and did not give those correctly, you may get 5 points deducted. You know, somebody put the return over here that's incorrect. because, you know, A1, B1, C1 is the beginning of the year one, and that does not have any return yet. So you do not earn any interest at that point. And then the constraint. Now, that you can see the cash inflow and the cash outflow make a difference. And I specify it's end of the year. So you look at this case. Let's grab randomly year three, for example. In year three, what's the cash inflow? The cash inflow is going to be 1.0682, 1.15B1. Those are money inflow. That's money we have. Okay? And then where are those money goes? Goes A3, goes to B3, goes to 16,000. See? So you have to balance those two sides. That's how you can see, you know, this equation. Let me see. Let me just be sure. End of the year. That's year two. So year two, we do not have yet. We assume those are the beginning of the year. Okay, the beginning of the year, and the money output, you know, spend the money at the end of the year. So that's the assumption I have. But if you made assumption, you know, those money at the beginning of the year, you're gonna move this over here. Okay, so it depends on, you know, your assumption over there. And I didn't make any difference out of there, because if you do that, you know, you put a 16 over here, and this one gonna be zero. So you just move this whole sequence just one more year to before. So that's what happened. Okay. Again, you can see those are the cash inflow, money inflow. You know, those are the outflow. Okay. That's the next period. The next period, and that's money spent. So they belong to the same category. So that's why this chart is very useful. Give you a roadmap to the solution. So you look at each column and map them out. Okay. The last one. There are a few people actually miss the last one. And again, understand the logic over here. You know, you look at the denominator first, because the denominator identify which element included in that year. Okay, so in our situation, you look at year one, for example. You know, you look at year one, you can see, you know, A1 is part of it, B1, C1, they are part of it. So that's you know the denominator. Once you know the denominator, and then you match them up with the patch them up with the risk ratings. So one for A1. 3 for B1, 5 for C1. So that gives you the numerator. And then less than equals 3 or 4 or 5, whatever they specify. So, okay? And the last question is sensitivity analysis. And as you can see, this question is question in chapter 3, question 28. So I just we did that in, you know, as an exercise, and what I did was I just, you know, didn't change anything, and just get this problem back again, and then run Excel, and I kind of that's the Excel output. So, and then come up with those few questions. Allowable decrease 0, allowable increase 70-45, so give you a lower and upper bound. And then you look at, you know, the 85, the objective function coefficient increased to 85, which is within the bound. If objective function is within the bound, okay, the solution won't change. The solution, the optimal solution still hold. Okay? Do not be confused with right-hand side change. When the right-hand side change, any binding right-hand side change going to cause the solution change because your fitable region different. Okay? But not for the objective function coefficient. Objective function coefficient change within the limits will not change the solution. But the value is going to change. Why? Because your coefficient changed. You know, that's part of the function. So if your coefficient changed, the solution is going to change. So in this case, you know, when we increase the margin and multiply by the corresponding solution, 70,000, so give you the new updated objective function value. Question? And the next one is the one actually is outside the bound for objective function value. See, you compute the allowable decrease, allowable increase, so you get the bounds. 55 is outside, okay? 55 is not within the boundary. So the logic we developed to update the objective function value, you know, is not applicable. So if you just state that, that's it. And I did a little bit of things, you know, one more step further to try to show you why that's the case. So I actually punched this in and solved the problem. That's the new solution. You can see they are not the same as before. We got a 50, 70, 90. Now you get a 80 now. So it's different. It's a different solution. Okay. So we cannot answer this question. That's what I'm saying. Okay. Right-hand side. Any right-hand side, in this case, you know, assembly hours, any change in the right-hand side for a binding constraint going to cause a change in the fitable region. Solution going to change. But if the right-hand side change within the limits, we do not need to know the solution in order to know the value of the new objective function in this case. So the objective function value is going to be different. We use the shadow price, you know, multiply by the incremental change, marginal change, increase or decrease of that, you know, constraint. So that will give us the new objective function value. Okay? So in this case, it is within the boundary. Within the limits, so we can do that. Okay, so the shadow price, you know, it's valid in this case. So we can compute it like this. Question: solution will change. Okay, so somebody say the solution won't change. You got the points deducted. That's a wrong concept. This question is harder, you know, because it's an open question pretty much, you know. So I ask you to discuss what happened and how do we approach this problem. You need to look at the printout first. You look at, you know, anything related to sterile. You can see there are two elements here. The first one is binding, E6. The next one is not a binding, E5. So you need to know what I mean, you know. So you go back to the original problem here. Okay, you can see E5, 50,000. That's a lower limit. It's not binding. E6 is 90,000, you know, its upper limit is bounded. So with that information, you can answer this question without a problem. You can see. So because, you know, currently it's on the upper limit. It's on the upper limit. But when the profit margin drops up to this 25, okay, up to the lower limit, when it touches the lower limit, the solution gonna be changed. So you can see the binding gonna change. So you're gonna move from 90,000 to 50,000, move from the upper limit back to the lower limit because the margin changed. So that's what happened. And then the objective function value can be computed. As far as it's within this, okay? Because if it is within this boundary, and then the solution won't change, okay? So unless it's outside the boundary, you got a 24, for example, and then this, you know, it's going to be the solution. It's not going to be 90,000 anymore. So that's what happened. Right hand side change. This one is the one, the right hand side, you can see the limits, but it's outside the boundary. So we cannot use the shadow price to update the objective function value. So if you just indicate it's outside the bounds, and you cannot determine the objective function value, that's it. And this, the solution is going to be posted on Blackboard after 3 or 4 calls, okay? Now, let's look at this. This one, you can see each element, how you get this reduced price. So so that's the equation that's on one of the pages in my notes, you know, it's on Blackboard. And what's the meaning of it? Again, you know, the meaning just match up with what you had before, the reduced cost. Right now, it's not a binding for that lower limit. It's not a binding, okay? But if the profit margin drops and it touches by $15, that will touch the lower limit, you know, and in that situation, the lower limit is going to be binding, the upper limit is not going to be binding. So that's the meaning of it, okay? I think that's it. So I'm going to post this about 3:30, 4 o'clock on Blackboard, so you can kind of look at specifically, okay? Question. Again, you know, I have a question about your grade, and anywhere I graded, you know, without looking at fully of your logic, you know, bring them back to me, and if that's reasonable, you get a few points back, you know. So you can see I tried pretty hard to give you those points. So, but you know, if you show me something, and I'd be glad to consider that. Okay. One comment about the performance on the test. So those people, you know, study for it, study together, and also did assignments independently. I don't care. You know, you discuss with anybody, work with anybody, but by the end, you have to be able to independently think through those problems. And I believe people did that, benefit a lot from it. Be able to carry them out by yourself on the test. You know, if you only rely on somebody else, work on the assignments, didn't kind of independently think through those, make sense for yourself, and that's where probably some of you, you know, couldn't perform on the test. And I feel it's not a hard test. I mean, you know, a lot of things we saw, you know, but I hate to say, you know, people miss a lot of points, you know, for a simple test. So, okay, let's look at the second test. So, if you have yours with you, and you can look at the solutions posted on Blackboard already, and I want to quickly go through the queuing part. I think that might be the time we have. And then if we have more time, we may finish the simulation part, okay? Let's look at this. You can see the information provided is every 6 minutes arrival. So every 6 minutes, you get one person, you know, get in, okay? So 6 minutes divided by 6 minutes, 60 minutes divided by 6 minutes, give you 10 people arrive each hour, okay? So you have to convert it to arrival rate in hours. And this service rate over here is 4 minutes each person being served, and 60 minutes divided by 4 give you 15. You know, that's a number of people can be served. It's almost always true, you know, the arrival rate should be less than service rate. Okay? Otherwise, you know, you're going to have a limited number of people waiting in line. So that's what we call it unstable, you know. For any questions related to identify the probability of arrival during a certain number of periods, be sure your arrival rate has to be consistent with that duration. Okay? That's only applicable for arrival. For service, it's different. Okay? So for service, we talk about the duration. So when we talk about duration, you do not need to do that. So, but a service you do. So, but the arrival you do. Question. I don't know any of you had a chance to look this over or busy on a lot of different things. Compare your performance from the third test with those on the second test and the first test. I personally feel you didn't spend as much time as you did for the first and second test. So so the class as a whole, you know, did not perform as good as I supposed to just look at the difficulties of the test. So to me, probably you know, other teachers push harder, you know, towards the final, give you a lot of things to do. You work more on the other courses, didn't get a chance to review for this class. You know, you barely get your assignments done, didn't have time to think through. And I actually had a few people I was talking, you know, and they told me that's exactly the case. You know, you got other tests, you know, accounting, whatever, the test coming, and you didn't get a chance to review, you know, our stuff. Nobody burn with the knowledge of kind of a course like this. You have to do those minimum exercise in order to understand. Okay. The utilization, the ratio of arrival to the service rate, probability of 4 people in the system. That's 4 people in the system. Probability of nobody in the system, okay, including service empathy, the line is empathy, so that's the meaning of it. And then we look at total time spent in the system. So total time spent in the system, including the time being served and also the time, you know, in the queue. So so that's the meaning. And L refers to the average number of people in the system. So that includes the one in the server and also includes the one in the queue. And the hours, you know, total cost of operating. So now, you should be able to look at this table and then understand the meaning of it. Okay, on the final, it's very likely I'll give you a table like this and then I answer a few questions out of it. Let me give you some examples. Okay, if we want to minimize the waiting time, somebody come in, PW means when I come over, I have to wait. That's probability of waiting. If I want to minimize probability of waiting, you look at probability of waiting first. So your first thing is to be sure when you look at a question, you know which column of this table you're looking for. So I need to look at probability of winning. That's this one. Okay? I want to minimize that, so I look at the smallest one. Okay? If I want to maximize for whatever the reason, and I need to look at this one. See? The answer is going to be different. Now, if the question says, let's look at the one customers spent the minimum amount of time for the whole service. So for the whole service means, you know, waiting in the queue and being served. So two things together. So minimum, so that's going to be W. You look at which one give you the smallest value, so that's going to be this one. Okay? If we want to minimize the probability, if we want to maximize the probability of nobody in the system, P0. Nobody in the system is going to be P0. I want to maximize the chance nobody in the system. Okay? Which one are we going to choose? The first one we're going to choose. This one is going to give you the possibility nobody in the system, like you get a better chance of it. Okay? And if you want to minimize the number of people in the queue, when I walk over and I see how many people ahead of me, I want to minimize that. That's LQ. You look at the last one. See? So each option gives you different ways. So be sure you understand the meaning of it. And the P4, for example, refers to there are four people in the system. The probability four people in the system. Okay? And that includes the one being served. And you know, if you look at if you know option two or three, there are two servers. There are two servers. Okay? Two servers, so four, probability four in the system means if I walk over, actually there are two people in the queue. You know, because the two people ahead of those two guys being served. So that's the meaning of it. Okay? And then you can see those basic computations, you know. You can see I emphasize more on basic concepts. Okay, so the final has more basic concepts than the test. So from that perspective, it's easier. Okay, so be sure when you review each portion, you know, the eight topics, put your emphasis on basic concepts first. Okay, and question. If you look at, you know, probability more than two people in the system, two people waiting in line, okay? We got two servers. More than two people waiting in line means three or more people in the line, okay? So you have to, you know, just kind of pause a little bit and think about the meaning of the question before you proceed. So a lot of people actually do not know exactly how many people we're looking for, okay? We're actually looking for three or more in the queue and plus two in the server, so we got five or more. That's the question looking for. You're actually looking for five or more. The whole thing is one minus four and less, you know, give you the answer. So that's what happened. So if you understand the logic, you know, again, try to put your emphasis on the logic first. Question. I think that's the whole thing about the queuing part. And the next part is the simulation. I want to kind of wait until Thursday, so we cover simulation and the forecasting, regression, and the decision analysis. That's okay? So you got a chance to go over those. Be sure to go over those topics, go over those three tests by Thursday, ask questions on Thursday, and then we have one more study session on next Monday. Okay. Question?
Test
That's all for today.